By now, you've probably heard about Linux, but whether you're a pro or have barely heard the word, Scale. The Southern California Linux Expo has something for you. Scale 6X will have over 50 speakers covering the hottest topics in open source software and more than 75 booths this year representing a wide range of commercial products and nonprofit organizations. Don't forget Friday's special sessions with DOCS, open source software in the healthcare industry, the Women in Open Source Conference, and new this year is the Open Source Software in Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2008 at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles, California. For more information and to register for the expo, visit socallinuxexpo.org. Use promo code CAST, that's C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration. We'll see you at Scale.
The Linux Night Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Think Tech Show. This is episode 228. Today is January 16, 2008. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello? Who's this?
Huh?
Who's this?
It's Link. How you doing?
Link, how you been, man? It's been a long time.
Yeah. I've been saving up, working some overtime so I can get the MacBook fart. That was just...
Really... you're talking about... The MacBook Air biscuit?
Yes, and that's what me and my family are all going to run soon.
All right. It's a little steep, though, don't you think? $1,800?
You're paying for quality. You're paying for prestige. You're paying for the genius behind it.
Let me ask you a question. What do you do if the thing takes a dump on you, if the operating system dies on you? There's no Ethernet port.
You go buy a new one.
There's no FireWire port.
You go buy
the only one USB port.
You go buy a new one. It's a no-brainer. But you don't want to hear about me and my AirBook. You want to hear about our wonderful guest. We'll come back to that later. Not the guest, the AirBook. So, wonderful guest tonight, finally on the show. Not because of anything I did, because I was lazy and didn't make enough contacts at that. Matthew Craig from... Linux gaming website.
Linux gaming world.
Matthew, how you doing today?
Hey guys, real good. Excited to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
No problem. We met you at Ohio Linux Fest.
Yeah, wearing the Ohio Linux Fest T-shirt right now. Actually, good conference. A lot of fun.
Have you taken it off since you left the Ohio Linux Fest?
No, and it's looking pretty bad too.
Now, was that your first Linux Fest or Ohio Linux Fest?
I was at the Linux Fest Northwest earlier in the year. But
That's a cool show, right?
The shirt? Yeah, shirt's great.
Okay,
it's
so you...
volunteering up there, so...
You were at Linux Fest Northwest. You volunteered there?
At the Ohio Linux Fest.
Oh, at the Ohio Linux Fest. So you were at the Linux Fest Northwest. You were at the Ohio Linux Fest... there's a lot of miles in between there. Where do you actually live?
Nashville, Tennessee. I do a lot of traveling on the road, though, so gives me some opportunities to get around and see some things.
I was going to say, because now, like, you weren't in between those two places. You have now formed, like, this wonderful triangle.
That's right.
Now, Let's find out who Matthew Craig is before we actually get into your website, because I'm curious to know. And when we get to your webs, when we get to what you actually are promoting and doing, the wonderful stuff that you're doing, if we can know who Matthew Craig is in the background and what his experience with Linux is, it'll make all more sense when you explain what you are doing.
Okay. A computer person like you guys, enjoy tinkering with systems, and what better way to do it than with Linux, and very much enjoy the aspect of getting in there and having the freedom to change the bits around and make copies and share things with friends. So been involved with computers for a long time. Ran a bulletin board back in the day, and thought it was great to form a community of people talking about technology and working with software. And these days, I'm doing a lot of Linux promotion, do technical services on the road, here, there, and places, working with way too much proprietary software, but in the free time, trying to promote Linux, trying to get better software out there to get an infrastructure going to enable more people and more businesses and more games.
It seems a lot of people who are like on the bubble to adopt to Linux, you know, they say that, you know, the big weakness is gaming in Linux. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of games out there that are quite good for Linux. I guess the real deficiency is with the big release titles. They just don't come to Linux. Well, what are your options if you want to run games?
Right. So there's a lot of misconceptions about gaming on Linux, and that's a big reason why I started the site there, is to try to dismiss a lot of the ideas that people have about the fact that you can't run games, or there's no games available, or there's no big game titles, or there's nothing worth playing. I got to keep my Windows box around because the games just aren't out there for Linux, or no one's buying games on Linux. That was a big misconception that really drew me to start this site. And there are a ton of options out there, and you've got the open source, of course, and you've got the you've got some commercial software that's out there, and you've got some big name titles too. Quake Wars just came out. It's probably one of the best first person shooters available for any PC operating system. So there's some good options there.
So, go ahead, Pat. I'm sorry.
I actually saw a really cool game from your site. It was Astro Menace.
Right.
And that's a pretty sweet little game. I'll put it in the RNC. People could check it out. It's like a shooter game. Mm-hmm. It's got some nice graphics and music.
So a little kind of high level on the site is that it only promotes commercial Linux games. Because one of the misconceptions that we wanted to dismiss was that there were no commercial games out there. So we're focusing only on commercial games, and for two reasons. One, to let developers know that there's a market out there to sell games for Linux, and to try to encourage developers to build more commercial games, and to have people take a look at commercial games and say, hey, there's some games out there that are worth buying. And maybe that's one less reason that I need to keep that Windows box around anymore.
Now, do you get static because you only focus on commercial games? Have you gotten feedback saying, why are you ignoring the non-commercial games, the open source games? Well, you know, that's a fallacy there, because there may be some commercial games that are fallacy. There may be some commercial games that are open. But do you get complaints from people saying, why don't you, focus on community-based games that aren't, so to speak, commercial?
Yeah, and that's a valid point. We try to put a lot of articles out that try to address that, try to address why we're not talking about free and open source software titles. We're not getting a lot of flack, I think, because there's other options out there. There are there are probably about 10, at least 10 websites that deal exclusively with no-cost games or free software games, not meaning the same thing there. So we're not getting a lot of the people that are looking for a no-cost game, something to download and put on their computer. And there's a lot of open source options out there. If you want to get a game that doesn't cost anything on Linux, it's real easy to do. You just go into the repository and click your way to installing the game. But the question is whether there is a commercially supported game out there. And I think that's the real advantage for Linux gamers to support a commercial market of games, is that we really want to get people into the community that are full-time supporting game systems out there. You know, we want another John Carmack. We want another my game company there. We want more developers that come in and say, listen, I'm going to spend my all day every day supporting games on Linux, and I'm going to build this content, and I'm going to make the best games available out there. So that's really what we're trying to target there, and that's who our the people who go to the site are looking for. So not a lot of platforms.
Speaking of Carmack, he had been talking about the company's latest upcoming project. What is it? Rage? Is that it?
Right. Yeah, a lot of news on Carmack. Not so much lately, but there were about 4 months ago. A lot of people are concerned about where Carmack is, because he was such a big supporter of Linux games. People are looking to him as sort of the direction of where commercial games are going. But if you look at what Carmack's been doing, he's going more and more into the consoles, and he's more into the high-end graphics games that specific chipsets on the consoles can drive those graphics. So he's moving in that direction, although he's still big on Linux and open source. In fact, he made it clear, I think it was at QuakeCon, that Doom 3 would be open source eventually, like his other titles. But I think he's not moving away from Linux. He's moving towards consoles. So in a lot of ways, I don't think he's the bellwether that he used to be for what Linux gaming is. And so I think we need to bring in a new generation of game developers, full-time game developers. And that's going to happen only if gamers start supporting the indie developers that are out there, and if we can get more developers to see that there's a market there for Linux games.
Just to focus on Carmack and Rage for a second, one more question regarding them. Have they confirmed a Linux port for Rage, or have they not said anything about that? Because I know they did focus pretty heavily on the console systems, but I wasn't clear whether or not they were going to have a Linux port.
Yeah, that Rage game has kind of fallen off my radar there since the news that it might not support Linux. So.
Okay, so given that, I've heard from various sources over the past couple of years that actually the PC gaming market has been waning pretty heavily in favor of the console systems these days, and that
sure,
it's really tough. Is this the period we're entering into of the indie market? Is this what we're seeing, or more indie market games these days? And are they going to start heading towards the consoles also, or do you think that they have a very good open run at the PC market still?
Sure. Yeah, it does seem that the market is going towards consoles. And what that means for indie developers who don't have large budgets and maybe they're producing a game by themselves or with a couple of collaborators over a six-month period, is that there's now more market share for them to go after, because there's going to, there may be less big name games out there. So in that regard, if you're putting together an indie game, you're trying to get a community of people together to support that game at a grassroots level. I don't think you can go to a better group of people than the Linux community, who already has a strong community aspect there, and is willing to support developers who are willing to support their operating system.
So the indie game market for Linux games, you've been keeping a close eye on it for the past couple of months. How's it looking? I mean, what are some of the companies that stand out to you, and what are the offerings look like? I know a lot of times some of these companies I go over to, they seem to have a lot of puzzle type games, something similar to Bejeweled or Tetris type clones. But we don't see a lot of Fears or what's another, like the Orange Box. Didn't really come out for Linux, but you could probably run it under Sudoku or those really popular, you know, style of titles. I'll let you talk.
So if you're producing a Fear type title or a Half-Life type title, you know, you're employing, I don't know, I don't have real good numbers on this, but 40, 60 people over a 2-3 year period, probably a 2-year period, to produce a multi-million dollar game, and you've got to go after the biggest market there. For indie gamers, they can't compete with something like that. So what they are successful in doing, like PopCap, for example, has been real successful on the Windows platform, producing high quality casual games, and I think they crank them out like one a month, and they've been real successful at that. But on the Windows market, you've got hundreds, thousands of indie gamers all trying to go after that market. On the Linux side, it's a lot more open and a lot more opportunities, I think. But saying that, it doesn't mean that there hasn't been a lot of games. I'm just taking a look at my Linux Gaming World site here, and in 2007, I'd say there were upwards of three dozen games that were released last year. So there's a lot of companies out there producing games and trying to make some sales and trying to make things work. A lot of options available for Linux gamers. Some of the bigger ones that I think are really standing behind Linux and really supporting it very well. Introversion Games. I don't know if you played the Linux Uplink game, the classic there, but they just came out with DEF CON, and that's been a real popular game, real high quality. Not sure that it's on the level of a Fear or something like that, but this is get something out there that's real playable, multiplayer, and is real popular both on the Windows and it's available for Linux. But they stand behind that Linux offering, and they support it very heavily. Contrast that with some of the other developers who will just use an engine that allows them to do cross-platform games, send it out there, and not really stand behind that Linux side. In fact, you'll see a lot of cross-platform games that only support Windows and Mac, even though the engine itself could have produced a Linux version. So there's something there where developers are not choosing to go with Linux. So for Linux gamers, we really need to be supporting the ones that do choose to take their time and to put out a release for Linux and to make it happen for us. Let's see, some of the other ones. One that I've always thought was pretty interesting is Deadly Rooms of Doom. And they've been putting out Linux releases for their Drawd game. A lot of people might say it's a little bit too basic for them, but it's a strategy game, not unlike the Robots game that you see out there, but they are getting a community together, and they're finding out what people want. They're taking mods that gamers are putting together, incorporating that, and they're putting out releases, helping the gamers in general join in the community and to get the most out of their games. And that's really there's a lot to be said for that, of adding value to your game, adding value to be part of the community. But what we really need are a couple of game companies out there that are going to say, hey, I know the market's small, but it's probably going to be going places. I'm going to just support Linux, or I'm going to especially support Linux. And we haven't seen a lot of that, and I believe that's primarily due to the failings of the Loki back in 2001 there. And that was a very unfortunate event that happened there. Now, we still have Linux Game Publishing that is working with European developers, producing ports of games following the Loki model. But if you read some of my past essays on the site, you'll see that I'm not a big fan of the Loki model. Taking a game that was released 2, 3, 4 years ago and reproducing it on the same architecture, the PC architecture, and then trying to sell it for as much or more than it sold for originally, it's not a good business strategy, in my opinion. I know Michael Sims. I wish him really well. I think what he's doing to try to support Linux gaming is great, to bring A class titles over to the Linux system. But we need some developers who, and I think it's going to come from grassroots efforts there, supporting indie developers. But we need developers who say, let's focus on the Linux market. There's something here, and we want to make it happen. Like I said, we need to find the next generation of CarMax and bring them up front and center and say, we're going to support these guys.
You had mentioned Deadly Rooms of Death. I think that's what it is. And that's right. One of the games that I had found about a year and a half ago. And I love that game. It's addicting. It might be really simple, but it's really addicting. Now, they allow you to not only purchase it for $19.95, but you can download it. And if I'm not mistaken, I downloaded it. I never paid for it. And is that an open source game? I can't remember.
Yep, that is an extremely unusual game. It is completely open source. And it's the only game that I know of, the only title that I know of that is 100% open source. You can download the title, but yet it still remained successful and has been around for 5 years, I think. It's still producing games, still producing sequels, and people are still buying the software. Like I said, getting the customers because he's showing how he's showing the value of being part of the community. You get some added features, you get a soundtrack, or you get the CD-ROM he'll mail to you. You get incorporated in the community by purchasing the game, and it's worth it for people to do that. I think it's a great model. I wish more people would take a look at it because you get the benefits of open source software, but you're still commercially viable. You can still do it full time. That's an interesting project. The only other open source project out there that I know of is Second Life, but that's not entirely open source. It's the client's open source and the server's not. There's, I think it is, I forget the name of it. It's this 4D space sim game. Give me a second. I'll find the name of it here. Add in Nexus. We had an interview with the lead developer there. He's looking to bring his title open source, but I'm not sure if he does it full time. He may do that. I believe he does do it full time. He's looking to bring that open source. He's trying to find ways to do that. But that's only because he really believes in the Linux Linux philosophy. He's Linux himself, and he just wanted to have more games out there. That's an interesting title if you get a chance to take a look at it. You actually need not just forward, left, and right, and up and down, but you need another control to go in the fourth dimension. You're flying around, there's things popping in left and right of you, behind you. Pretty fun game.
You had mentioned Introversion Software, and they're the makers of Darwinia, if I'm not mistaken, and they've really put out some great titles too.
Yeah, they did.
Have you played Darwinia?
I have, yeah.
That
I don't
is,
think it came out for Linux, though.
No, it is out for Linux. I played it on Linux,
it?
Yes. I think all their titles are out for Linux, actually. At least the ones that are still advertised on their website.
It was a few years back. I don't quite recall.
Yeah. I'll double check. The only one I'm not sure is Uplink, but... I'll double check.
Yeah, so Uplink is definitely on Linux there. There was a big buzz about that one that came out. That was back when not a lot of there were hardly any commercial titles out there. I think it was same time Loki was coming out. But actually, I'm actually not a big gamer. I used to play quite a bit back in the day, right? But these days, you know, work and the life in general it's got me so busy. But this is primarily, I'll load up a game just to take a look at it so I can write a few words about it. But this site is really just to let other people know about commercial games that are out there, and it's more about promotion of commercial projects that are out there, because it just didn't seem to be that much, that many websites available out there that were letting people know about what commercial games are out there and helping developers get the word out about their projects.
Wow, for someone who's not really a game player, man, you really took the reins of a website that would promote games.
Sure. We're very focused in that regard. Oh, hey, I have some, speaking of the website, I have some news wanted to share with you. We're not actually going to go public with this until Friday, but figure because you guys are a great bunch, I would share it with your audience. If you go to news.linuxgamingworld.com, that's like news except the T instead of the S. You'll see our new format that we're going to. We heard a lot of comments that the site didn't look like something that would really engender the community. So we did some work there. Get a guy to take a look at Drupal. I'll post the link in the chat room here.
Was that? Okay, I'll wait till you actually post the... Oh, okay. Ha. Okay. Wow. That's nice. I like that.
Little different. Yeah. And we just finished migrating all the data over, so just a couple more days to do some QA on it, and we'll get it moved over at the end of the week. You're getting the sneak preview.
Awesome. Hey, have you tried out... I'm really curious. Have you tried out... the Basilisk Games Echelon, Book 1.
That has not been one that I've gotten around to giving a try to, actually. A fellow who wrote a few words up for it for me has been playing it. I don't have too much information on it.
Because that looks really exciting to me. I like RPG games. That looks like a lot of fun.
Well, from a market perspective, I'm really excited about that title because it's the first RPG that's come out since Exile 3 in 1995. So it's been more than 10 years since we've had a commercial RPG for Linux. And the big reason for that is that RPGs take so much intellectual property. I hate to use the word. I know it's a bad word in the Linux community, but But, you know, you have an expectation of a good storyline. You need a lot of writing. You need lots of little side quests. You need to have decent music, probably voice actors, and quality art assets. And a lot of people think that, well, we'll just throw an open source engine together and we'll get ourselves an RPG. And if you look on SourceForge, you will see millions of, I mean, just look into the RPG games. I don't, you know, there's very few that are finished, and even the ones that are finished are not quite finished. If you take a look at that FreeDroid RPG there, you know, it looks great, but the storyline, you know, got no storyline to it. So, and I think most people point to that as the top open source RPG there. So that's real exciting, that RPG, because that may be a better bellwether of what the gaming scene is going to look like for the next couple of years. If we're seeing RPGs out now for Linux with a group of developers that's actively supporting the Linux distribution, then that may be good things. And you'll notice that's book one, right, indicating that they're planning more releases for that one too. And we've gotten a press release from these guys that really explicitly says that they are very much standing behind the Linux, their Linux clients there. So we're real excited about those games coming out.
Yeah, I'm excited. There are so many interesting games out there. One of the ones that I've been hyping the past couple of weeks, which is another one I need to buy, is the Penumbra Overture, which I saw that you had.
Sure.
That was, it's just right up my alley. Kind mm-hmm. of a survival horror type game. There has been a dearth of first person shooter games available for Linux, and it has a big market, and there's a lot of engines out there that have been open sourced. I'd really like to see more games like Echelon type RPGs or other types of genres coming to the Linux platform. Personally,
right? Yeah, and the first-person shooters, of course, come from the open-sourced Quake engines, and that's been great for Linux gamers who want to play a first-person shooter. There's a lot of different versions of that engine that are out there, and they have a lot of options. But on the other hand, this makes it really difficult for developers, because what developer these days is going to write a first-person shooter for Linux? It just doesn't make any sense. You're competing with all these great first-person shooters out there. You really need to make something on the type of Rage level or Quake Wars level, something really spectacular to draw people away from that. You can't make a mediocre first-person shooter these days and get away with it. Not with all the good Quake clones that are out there. But with the Penumbra series, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that, you know, that offers something a little extra, something you don't get from a shooter, right? And it's I played a little bit of it. I just took a look at a trial. What was the tech trial? I think they called it the tech demo, and it was exciting. It definitely had some mood to it, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yep.
What about MMORPGs? I mean, the biggest one out there will run under Wine or Sudega. But do you see any indie companies coming down the pike with MMORPGs?
Oh, yeah, MMORPGs. That, my opinion, is the killer app for Linux gaming, right? If we could get a quality MMORPG, I think we'd be done. I mean, we would be there. We would be, Linux gaming would be on the map, all right? And the funny thing is that the big one, right, the World of Warcraft that everybody's playing, is that could have been, that could be, I mean, I look at that and I think, oh, if only we had the Linux client of that, if only they They've put that out there. All these people that are sticking 40 hours into the game per week would have no, you know, they could stay on the Linux platform. They'd have no reason to go over to the other one. And it's great that to hear that it is, it runs through Wine, but it's not supported, right? The Blizzard does not support that configuration. So when you write their tech support and say, hey, I'm paying my money for this game, and it's not working the way that it's supposed to work, they're going to say, oh, you're running it to one. It's not a supported configuration. So they're laughing all the way to the bank with your check, but you're not getting what you pay for. So we really need to see an MMORPG out on Linux, I think, and that's going to be our beachhead right there, because once people have something that they can, an immersive experience that they can keep going back to, and with dynamic content so that, you know, they can play it year after year and still see new things in there, like a second life, that's going to be it. And people will say, well, this is all I want right here. And I think it's pretty clear that's what people want to see on the PC computing. You look at the successes of World of Warcraft and that's what people are wanting right there. You can look at any of the Linux forums and see people saying, hey, I'm going to build the next great big MMORPG out there. And again, a lot of failings because there's so much intellectual property, so much time that needs to go into building one of these things. It's really going to have to come from a developer to produce this. I believe there's something out there that I thought I read something recently about an MMORPG for Linux that was out there, but it doesn't ring a bell. There's some open source options out there, but like I said, if you don't have the intellectual property that to produce something with the voice acting and the storylines, you're just not going to capture people's attention for that long.
Yeah, I played a couple of the open source MMORPGs. Eternal Lands is one, and Plane Shift is another. And I really liked Eternal Lands. Plane Shift was kind of a little difficult to actually get involved in, I felt. And then, of course, I play WoW. And WoW has been, like, the easiest to jump into. Eternal Lands was easy to pick up, but it's kind of a difficult game. It's not as easy as WoW is to run around and level up and everything, but that's what it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, MMORPG, and I'm sorry to cut you off there, but continue on, please.
So yeah, it's kind of a catch-22, right? You're not going to see somebody produce a real big game that costs a lot of money to produce when they don't think that there is a big market for it in the Linux area. And there's not going to be a big market for it until there's some companies that are producing some real big games for it. A lot of that, so on the site we're trying to attract more developers over to Linux because, you know, there's a lot of good reasons for them to come over. You know, they can convert, they import their product over to all the new tablets and cell phones that are coming out that are based on Linux. There's a lot of different distributions out there that they can be working with. They can take advantage of all the open source tools that are available. But the second side of that is that Linux gamers have to get more involved with the purchasing of the titles, and I think that's a bigger challenge than bringing the developers over, because the developers who I'm talking to, a lot of them say, if we could do that if there was a market there, and certainly we support the Macintosh there. That's not a big market, but are people going to purchase the games on the Linux side? And a lot of people look at Linux and say, well, the people who use Linux only are into no-cost software, so they never buy it. And just a quick aside there, you know, one of the misconceptions I've heard from developers is that, you know, Linux people are you know, lack of a better word, big pirates of software because they do so much copying. They're so used to copying the software around. But, you run a website, I'm sure you look at the logs of the website, and you can see the search results that people came into the website for. And we've identified people that were searching for keys or pirated software, and also the activation keys for the titles. And we have not found one yet that runs a Linux operating system. They all tend to, they fall into the site thinking that there might be activation key or something on the website, and you can tell the operating system of what they're running. Even though that we have about 60% of our visitors are running Linux operating systems, 0% have been the ones that are looking for these codes. And in fact, Macintosh has been really the one that the biggest one, biggest percentage of people looking for the pirated software and activation codes. So just a little fun aside there. But about getting people to purchase the games, I was wondering if I could read you a quotation here that I found that I thought was pretty interesting. Yeah.
Go right ahead.
If you don't mind.
No, okay. No, by all means, go ahead.
So this is in regards to the Korean PC game market, and I don't know if have you heard of Lineage? The MMORPG Lineage?
It sounds familiar. I'm not that well-versed in it.
Okay, so before WoW was around, back in the EverQuest days, there was a title over in Korea that it was called Lineage, and there was some news about it at one time, and it was something like 40 times more popular, 40 or 50 times more popular than EverQuest was. And I always kind of stuck with me of why that was so much popular over there. I think it still may be more popular than World of Warcraft over there, or it may not. I'm not quite sure. But I found this quote here, and that seems applicable. And also to put this into perspective, because I'm talking with developers, they're saying, well, how many people use Linux, and there's a lot of different estimates out there. I'd put it, somewhere in near the percentage for Macintosh users, but some people put it upwards. I think Shuttleworth said 8 million for his operating system, 10 million. I'm not exactly sure, but on the plus side, it's probably maybe upwards of 40 million people using the operating system out there. So I found this quote that was very, it played well with this, right? And this is off of a movie actually called Gamer Brazil, and it had to do with the Korean game market over there. And if I could just read this short quote to you that I had in front of me. South Korea wouldn't import many Japanese products. Just kind of an insight into this, it's because of the relations that they had there with Japan and their past history with Japan and Korea there, the different wars there. But going on, that's actually the reason why the PC market has grown in Korea. In Korea, PlayStation didn't exist, nor the PS1, nor the PS2, nor even the Nintendo 64. There weren't Sega games there for a political reason. The LAN houses, internet cafes, have brought economic development to South Korea because with the IMF, International Monetary Fund. During the IMF time, which was 1998, 22,000 LAN houses were opened, and these LAN houses represented a revival of the industry, a revival of many industries that were breaking. Nowadays, Korea is the country that produces most of the online games, and because of that, of the LAN houses. It's also the country that has more access to broadband. You have Denmark, you have Sweden, but those countries have 5-10 million inhabitants. Korea has 40 million inhabitants, but 75% of the population has access to the broadband internet. Okay, so that's the quote there that I wanted to read, and that's kind of an explanation why Lineage was so popular, is because people had access and refused to buy into the established gaming culture that was out there. Even though Japan was right next door to where they lived, they refused to buy those products on principle, right? And it's funny, there's 40 million in Korea, 40 million Linux people out there, and I think we could stand to gain the same thing. We could stand to gain the same kind of infrastructure advance if we were to only decide that we weren't going to purchase other products, if we were going to purchase only Linux games, and then see where we're going to go from there. You know, build the marketplace up, and then see what we can get after that.
That's an interesting idea. One of the things that I find, one of the hurdles that I think that we come upon, particularly in the Linux world, and which kind of brought up at the beginning the reaction of your site from people, some segments of the Linux community, are very, very pro open and free software and opposed to closed and proprietary software. And a lot of games, particularly commercial games, tend to be closed and proprietary. What do you think is the, I mean, that's a pretty big hurdle to have to overcome in this community, number one. And kind of also on the flip side, if I may posit that probably out of all the types of software that the community seems to be more accepting of being closed is games, though, too. So, I mean, what are your opinions?
Right. So just to say one thing there is that just kind of as a point, you know, a purchase of a Microsoft game, when you purchase a Microsoft game and play it through Wine or a Microsoft-supported game, you're registered, you're almost, you know, it's voting election, it's election season around here, right? Everybody's talking about politics, but you're registering your vote for another game, for more Windows games. You're registering your vote, you're saying, I support Windows games. I'm ready to plunk down my money for a Windows game here, and I want you to build another one. And meanwhile, they're also, you know, if it's a cross-platform game, they're looking at those people who produce that game are looking at those numbers, saying, and regardless whether you're running a Linux operating system or not, they're looking at that purchase, and they're saying, even if they run Linux, they're going to buy the Windows games. Why should we make another Linux game? And so more to the point of your question, why? What's the advantage of Linux people buying closed source games when they're so focused on open source and free software? And I think the answer to that is just in the quotation that I just read you, is that we know that by buying into this this marketplace of this technology, that we're helping to build the infrastructure, the underlying infrastructure of those games, right? So you buy the game itself is not a standalone technology, right? When you buy a entertainment title, it doesn't come on its own hardware. It doesn't come with its operating system, right? It's running on an operating system. It's using SDL libraries. And when those developers use those libraries, they're not doing it isolated in a clean room somewhere. They're doing it within the community. They're going to SDL developers and they're saying, I'm building a title that needs to do these things, and your library doesn't support it. How can we make this functionality happen? And they're adding to the functionality, and they're doing quality checking, and they're also making it more of a standard, right? So the next guy who comes over and says, well, what library am I going to use? He's going to look at that game and say, hey, he used that game. It worked pretty well for him. I'll use that too, right? So there's a lot of reasons why we should be, as a Linux community who embraces open and free software, should be looking towards making these purchases of Linux commercial and closed source proprietary games. You know, we have a lot to gain from that. And, you know, frankly, well, anyway, so I was going to go somewhere with that, but it's kind of off the point there. But, yeah, so I think there's a lot of good reasons for taking a look at it.
So I take it you're not too thrilled with using Wine, Sudoku, or Crossover Office for running games. That's not.
Oh yeah, so yeah, so that's my I'm anti that. I'm completely anti that. That's the fighting words for me. You know, I mean, not only are you're paying somebody to make your support a title on a different operating system that's not your own, but then you're paying a third party to make that happen, right? You're paying this these crossover guys to further encourage people to only make games on an operating system that's not yours. And to make it worse, you know what they're doing with this money? We broke the story a couple of months back. They're producing DRM solutions for Macintosh now. And you know what they're going to do with those DRM solutions next, right? They're coming to the Linux operating system. That's what you're paying for when you go and buy that the crossover solution. Drives me crazy.
What's their DRM solution that they're putting together? I wasn't quite aware of that.
Oh, I pull it up. I think we ran the story last summer.
I know they were producing a crossover for Mac and for OS X, so that you can run Windows software on OS X, but I wasn't aware that there was anything DRM-like that they were producing.
And we get these story submissions all the time, but you know, I don't have it up in front of me. But if you do a search for it, what's the name of the company that runs Crossover there?
Codeweavers.
You would search for it on the Dreamweavers, right? You would
Codeweavers.
Search for Dreamweavers, DRM, Apple. You'll find it.
Okay. So what conferences are you going to be hitting up this year?
Oh, okay. A lot of good conferences out there. You know, I'm trying to talk myself into going up to Nauticon there. That's a long haul up there, but maybe take a flight. Yeah, I've seen those guys around a couple different conferences, and they seem like good folks, so might try to get up that way. But, you know, I think we're missing Scale. Is that right? Scale's going on right now.
That's coming up.
Bad, but, let's see.
You going to be back to Ohio Linux Fest this year?
Open up my calendar here. Oh yeah, wouldn't miss it. That's not until September though, right?
Yeah, usually like the end of September, I believe. I'm not exactly sure what the date is this year.
Let's see. I guess there's a Florida convention in end of the month here.
What convention is that?
No. Florida Linux Show, little tiny thing on a Sunday.
So what?
Do you have any events that you're planning on staging another audio podcast from? That was pretty fun. Why don't you guys operate up there at Ohio Linux Fest?
Yeah, we're definitely going to be at Ohio Linux Fest. I don't think that we have plans to be anywhere else this year. It gets kind of expensive for us and with families and everything to be able to travel out like that. Right, Pat?
Exactly.
But I would love to go to
more. It's a little tough for us on the East Coast, right, because there's so many conferences over on the left coast there, right?
Yeah, everything happens out west.
You know, you've got the Last Hope there. It's kind of a con in July up in your neck of the woods. July 18th.
I got a question for you, Matt.
Sure thing.
Do you go to these gaming fests where these guys game for, like, you know, 2, 3, 4 days straight?
No, I've never been to one. I've seen some pictures, though. Everybody looks like a zombie there.
I was going to say, I mean, you hear these horror stories that, you know, especially in Asia, Korea in particular, where you have people gaming for just days on straight and some poor guy just drops dead from being up for so long.
Right. No, but you know what I think would be great, though, you know, it's not really commercial software, but maybe it will get more people onto Linux. But, you know, with the open source software, you can get any computer you want up and running with these games. It would be great to have these kind of flash mob things going on in a park or somewhere where a bunch of people bring their laptops and set up one of these first-person shooters. You know, out in the middle of nowhere. I think that would be kind of fun to see.
What's your opinion of that? Oh crud! What is it? It's the first article on your website right now. The game streaming technology.
Oh yeah, that looks pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, stream my game.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, that's basically like a wine type solution too, right? So if you're gonna run something on your Windows box, you know, playing on your Linux box, that's another option for you. But at least you're not paying for somebody to write code to keep it from your box, basically. But yeah, kind of fun. I mean, it really should be called "Stream Your Friend's Game," though, right? Because I mean,
yeah.
if you could play a game on anybody's computer over the internet, I mean, how long do you think it's going to take before people are, you know, playing their neighbor's games? And I was thinking about it, that doesn't really break any kind of copyright, right? Because it's never been copied. It's just playing. You're basically putting the video out to somebody else's computer. Interesting technology, though. Interesting technology.
Yeah, it does look pretty interesting, but I don't know. I think you have to pay for the service or something.
No, actually, it's free. I mean, they give you a real low resolution, like 640x480 for free, and then it's like $10 a year for the super high resolution.
That's not too expensive, but.
I mean, given you can play anybody's game on anybody's computer, then, you know, it's a good deal.
I'd be interested to see how well that actually works. And, you know, some of the more specific...
So we've got a video on it. You know, we've got a video on the side of it.
Yeah, I see that.
It's pretty neat.
It's actually...
They got Crisis going in that thing.
Sounds like a good time. So what else you got coming up? What you got a site change... do you guys get insider information from these gaming companies?
Yeah. You know, we're in talks with these guys quite often. You know, we're always trying to put together projects and see what they're doing and where they're going, and you know, mostly just trying to get them aware that there's the Linux market out there, and trying to make them feel good about getting out there and promoting their title with gamers there. You know, so we're kind of tracking a bunch of things. X-Plane is coming out with a new release. They're in beta right now. People are pretty excited about that one. You heard of that game? It's like military spec flight simulator.
I've heard of it.
And he's also a big supporter of Linux, always has been. So I want to make sure that he's on track for releasing that and getting the word out. And let's see, the words. There's a lot of betas. A lot of times you see these betas just hang in there for year after year, and they don't quite ever make the cut, right?
Right.
Savage 2 is a big one coming out. Everybody's been waiting for a long time. That's supposed to be out in the next couple of weeks. Um,
Yeah, that sounds pretty exciting, Savage 2. That was a pretty interesting hit when it came out. Although I never had the opportunity to play it yet, unfortunately. I've seen it, but not played it. It looks really good. What is your opinion of emulation?
So, emulation is another way for Linux gamers to get their hands on no-cost games. And, you know, between emulation and Wine but emulation and the open source titles that are out there, Linux gamers have a lot of options available to them, short of buying commercial games. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge for low-end games out there. It's not so much getting developers on the platform, but to get gamers to say, hey, I'll look past all the million free or no-cost solutions that I have and go and plunk down some money for one. But yeah, I mean, geez, somebody's showing me the DOSBox titles that are out there. You basically go through all the, everything that was made back in the DOS days, works better on DOSBox than it did on the 386, I think.
Yeah.
But were you talking about, the MAME type?
Yeah, DOSBox, MAME, all those applications.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get shown MAME. I guess that was on a Windows box, though. But the repositories are built into most of the distros. You just click a button and it's down on your computer in one click. But I get shown it on a Windows box. And sure, you ever play this? What was that? I can't remember the title off the top of my head. It will come to me later. But these ones that you plunk the quarters into time and time again trying to beat it and to see it when you could just set it up with, 1,000 credits in it. It's really something different there.
Yeah.
Sinistar, that's what it was.
Ah, Sinistar. I remember that game.
Yeah, right.
That was one of my favorite. That's the one where you're flying around in a ship collecting those little asteroid pieces or something. Guys and if you let them build the Sinistar, he would kind of, I live, and then come running after you with this big demon ship. Right. That was awesome.
Yeah, with the actual digital voice that used to scare people when they'd walk by.
Yes, that was a good game. What was it just about to ask? Oh, so aside from Linux gaming world, I don't think that's your day job, is it?
No. Like I said, I do technical work on the road. Mostly work in the data centers, work virtualization technology, cluster technology, whatever's out there. But it's pretty dry, and when you're dealing with people's data, you're gonna always be on the up and up, and just my way of exposing myself to some of the funner things in life. Running this website here. And this is kind of just the thing that I do that I'm very excited. I get me excited because I think, I think more people would adopt Linux as a desktop if they had some high-quality entertainment items out there. To kind of go off and tell you a quick story there. Somebody showed me an Apple computer when I was in school, and I thought to myself, yeah, what's that? It's just a... it runs a word processor like everything else. And they showed me this Maelstrom game. You play this one? Kind of like Asteroids, where you go collect the power-ups?
Yes, I have. I've seen it.
Right. And I said to myself, I got to get this over on the Windows computer I've got. And they said, no, not available on Windows. Not available on Windows. And all of a sudden, the Apple looked really good to me. I was like, wow, maybe Apple is a pretty good computer. So I think there's something really to be said for entertainment titles. They kind of get the, kind of they have a real bad, kind of a, almost a bad word around, right? The gamers, like you said, get people to think about the Korean gamers who die of a heart attack in the middle of their games. But I think it's an important part to the desktop experience and trying to make it happen for them. And I get you were asking about the day job. I mean, it's more interesting than the day job, I think, you know.
It depends on what perspective you're coming from. I think your day job sounds extremely interesting. definitely. One thing about that, which I've kind of heard put into play over the past, you know, throughout the past, that one of the big driving markets for computer hardware innovation and software innovation has been games. And I'm curious.
Absolutely.
I'm curious. What possibilities might we be seeing on that type of drive? If we're looking at the console markets, you know, taking a lot of the thunder away from the PC market, is there going to be a shift?
Yeah, I mean that's kind of a sad thing to take a look at, right? Because the PCs are always been the hobbyist kit, you know, the people who want to have free access to their computers and get in there and tinker around and put in a new card and you know, upgrade the models, and it's all built for doing that and for open technology. And of course Linux plays right into that, which is why it's so popular on the PC, right? But with consoles you don't get any of that. And you don't get to, you don't have the ability to, in a lot of ways, to make copies of things. And so you really lock down the technology. And in some ways, that's why big developer houses are going towards it, because they have so much control over it, and the consumer has so little control over it that they can sell these games for a huge amount of money. And people have no option to buy anything else because a Nintendo or a PlayStation or Sony would have has all the access to, or has all the titles that you can buy. You can only buy it through them. You don't have an indie market that you can go to. So while you know, I think the big names out there in entertainment would like to see consumers move towards a console market and move away. You know, I think that's why Microsoft's putting out their consoles there and trying to push the computer out from the computer and onto a console, because they'd much rather have you on a system that is all locked down and they can turn the screws and get you to pay whatever they want, right? So that's kind of a sad area in my opinion. I mean, certainly if you just want to have a gaming system and you don't want the hassles of having a fully configurable computer, then yeah, go with a console system, but you're gonna pay the price for that, you know, a price for convenience. But I think that's a price that most people are willing to pay.
What's your opinion of the trend of kind of embedded low end systems? The Triple E PC is an example. Some of the handheld devices that have come out in support of Linux. There's been the Nokia N800 series. There's the GP2X gaming console. What are your opinions of those?
Yeah. I'm actually logged into IRC on my N800 right now, actually. So, I love those things. You know, hopefully people will choose open technology rather than a closed technology. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be playing out. Heard from folks that went to the open source conference last year that everybody was walking around with an iPhone. in a lot of ways, people aren't getting the idea that even the open source people aren't getting the idea that you want to stay with open hardware, not just open software.
Right.
So you can get in there and make those changes. You know, N800 is great. Boy, it's got a little camera on it for video conferencing, but then go onto the developer's website, you know, where they produce all the Linux ports, so you can load it on your N800. And the other day I see, oh, it's got a camera module, so I load that on the N800. And now my N800 it functions as a camera as well, which is I was playing around with it on the holidays, which is a lot of fun. You know, you can take a little webcam like that and put it through a binoculars and I was taking great pictures.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do. So I take it that you primarily run open source software yourself, and I would think use Linux, yes?
Yeah, except where I have to use it for work. Yeah, I'm sure it's like you, right?
No, I use open source software all the time, even at work. I'm lucky that way.
All right, that's great.
So what distributions you running?
Mostly staying with Ubuntu, really. I mean, that seems to be real pain-free way to operate, Everything plugs in and just works, I was fighting with the Red Hat's, Fedora's operating system there. Tried to get Bluetooth to work a couple of years back, and I fought with that thing for a couple months. I was like, geez, a couple months to get a piece of hardware to work. And just tried it today, actually, plugged the same Bluetooth device into Ubuntu. The thing just came right up, and GNOME Bluetooth handler came up, and it's just like, oh, this is great. Everything works like a Macintosh, but it's still wide open, and you can get in and make your changes to it. So that's an exciting project. And just to kind of give a promotion for a project that I'm working on, the Ubuntu local community teams, they've got these statewide teams around, and they also go to the conferences. I think there was a table there at the Ohio Linux Fest too, and good folks in there. If you're interested in getting involved with Ubuntu and promoting it in the area, helping your neighbors get involved with it, definitely check out the Ubuntu local community teams.
Do you have a lug in your area?
Yes. Actually, I'm vice president of the Nashville Linux user group here, and we meet monthly at Vanderbilt University. We're sponsored by the Department of Biostatistics, which is a group that runs entirely Kubuntu throughout their staff and student groups, and that's really interesting to see those guys go, because I think myself and most of us on the show here, we probably use Linux. We see Linux as the odd man out in the world of Windows, but this group is only focused on Linux, and Windows for them is the odd man out. They don't support anything any Windows systems at all, and they have an understanding of how the Ubuntu ecosystem works in a way that I think a lot of us miss out on, because we don't use it, and we're not surrounded by it, and everyone we know isn't using it every day. You talk with these guys, and they just the way they have an understanding of the technology, and it's exciting to see them move forward with it. And contribute back to the open source community too. When they recognize that when they need to do something and it's not working, that they can write a script or write a program and make that work, and then submit those changes up to a wiki that they have, and then make that available for the whole internet to use.
That is nice. Matthew, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. We are going to move on to some other topics, because Pat has some stuff he wants to bring up. And we're by no means kicking you off. You're more than welcome to stay on if you like. Stay on as long as you want to the end of the show if you like. That's fine. But we really appreciate all the work that you're doing. And I really appreciate it, too, because I'm glad to see the great offerings out there on the Linux platform, not just the great open source and free software offerings, but also what's available commercially. It's good to see that people are throwing in their support commercially too. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you very much for having me and allowing me to prattle on here and promote Linux Gaming World.
Yeah, thanks. Definitely. Like I said, you're more than welcome to stay on. We're not kicking you off at all. Pat, you had some...
Thanks a lot for coming on. That was a very interesting interview. I learned a lot about, the Linux gaming scene that I don't really know a lot about, since I really don't play any games on Linux, you know.
Right.
Now it's time
to start.
Yeah,
my pleasure, and see you at the next Ohio Linux Fest.
Definitely.
Yeah.
See you there.
But if you're like I said, you're more than welcome to stay on. Link, I didn't even know you got back.
Oh, yeah, I've been back for quite a while. I've been listening to the interview, so.
Okay, I didn't hear you get back on. Does everything work out?
Well,
for you?
I've had the phone on the whole time. I just been on mute, so.
Oh, I thought you.
I've been listening to you guys the whole time, and you know, and talking back and forth would work too. So.
Well, that's good. It's good that you didn't leave, because that gives us the opportunity to fire you at the end of the show, right? You dirty bastard.
Yeah, man, bring it on.
Pat, you've been biting at the, you know, chomping at the bit to talk about this wonderful new product that has just been released to the market.
I don't want to talk about KDE, but if you want to talk about the...
I thought that's what you were going to talk about.
MacBook Air Biscuit, we could talk about that for a couple of minutes.
I thought you wanted to talk about KDE. I didn't know you wanted to talk about the MacBook Air Biscuit. But, whatever.
Yes. Let's talk about KDE 4.0. You guys got a chance to install on any machines?
No.
I put it on my workstation on my laptop on Friday night, and I played around with it for the whole weekend pretty much. And the real deal is it's nice. It's promising. It's got a lot of potential. Going to Qt4 is a massive evolutionary step. But I don't think it was done. No offense to the KDE developers. They've done a fantastic job. But KDE 4.0 is not a final release, and that's my opinion. A lot of cool things that I liked. A lot of incomplete things. I mean, one of the things about KDE that people talk about is the level that you can tweak it. With this release, there's not much tweaking you could do. Case an example is the new replacement toolbar that they have at the bottom of the screen, which is using Plasma now, I believe. There's no way to resize it. And reading some of the KDE blogs and some of the chatter going on their mailing lists, it sounds like they're going to, you know, after this big release party that's going down this weekend, that's like the first thing they're going to address. So my take on the whole thing is they want to get it out of the door as quickly as possible. You know, they've been working on this for 2 years. They pushed it out. There's a lot of cool features that's in there, but it's nowhere near a final release, in my opinion. A lot of the stuff is immature. A lot of the applications that would normally ship with a KDE release are not updated with this. It seems that they're looking to make the 4.1 release the big release where everything is moved up. You know, my impression is that basically they want to get more people using it. They want to get some bug ports in, and they want to get some feedback on it. And yeah, by releasing it as is the stable release, they're going to get more people on it. But a lot of people are going to be like gnashing their teeth, you know, criticizing them because it's not complete.
We were talking about that earlier today on the IRC. And going back and forth and I have difficulty with them, the publicizing of the release. And I think, you know, and not to detract anything from the KDE developers and the community behind us doing a fantastic job. But my concern about that is given the state that it is in release, and Aaron had made a great point in saying that this is a 4.0 release, you know, open source software supposed to release often, you know, put it out there. It is not a complete release that people would expect or should expect from a 4.1 release, I guess is kind of what they're alluding to. My concern is with all the publicity and celebration behind it, many people may misconstrue that it is a final completed release and criticize KDE heavily for its missing features, the entire suite of software that's usually behind KDE, the additional stuff like KOffice and some of the other applications that are not yet ready for prime time in the 4.0 version. I just fear that they might get some negative feedback or fallout from that. But by all means, I'm very excited to see, you know, their product, number one. I think it's going to be phenomenal. And I think when we do get 4.1, it's going to blow everybody away.
Yeah, it's not complete. Some of the cool things, though, is the compositing. K-Win is it's pretty nice. It's a built-in compositing with the window manager, and it's pretty cool. There weren't a lot of plugins for it. I'm sure that's another reason why they want to get it out, so they can, you know, get the developing other developers in on it, and, you know, get people in and creating it. Obviously, they're behind, you know, Compiz, which has been around for a while now. You know, there's a ton of plugins for Compiz, so I guess they want to get some people to start creating plugins for K-Win compositing.
Yeah, and you know, and at the risk of becoming, you know, exactly what I just said, I don't, you know, again, I don't want it to sound like I'm really ragging on KDE as being a broken, incomplete mess, which is not the case. It's exactly where it's supposed to be at this stage of development. And it's coming a long way.
I guess the real bone of contention is Aaron was very adamant that it's not a beta release. It's not a beta release. For a lot of people, you know, coming in, it looks like a beta release.
Oh, but Pat, it's not a beta release. It's a 0.0 release. What do you think, Link? The final decision rests upon your shoulders.
I don't know. You know, I haven't had a lot of chance to look at it. I've heard, you know, some people like Pat that have looked at it and say that it has a lot of promise, but it really is not ready to rock and roll yet. I suspect, you know, like Pat, I suspect that by the time the 0.1 comes out, that things will be much, much better. But, you know, they have to do this initial release so that they can get the community behind it. And once a few people start, you know, a few community members start actually using the 4.0, they're going to start, you know, all the extras are going to start being developed for it actively and quickly. And the 4.1 will come out and be, you know, much more polished and user-friendly for the community and things like that. So, you know, go for it. I wish I had had time to, you know, play with it and try it. I just haven't yet.
I see what
the other thing to take notice is that, you know, all the major releases released, you know, a couple months ago. So they're in between. They were talking, you know, when we spoke to Aaron, he was talking about summertime for 4.1. But I've been reading some of the mailing list chatter, and it sounds like they're looking to get a bug fix in by the end of the month or so. So if they can get that in and that gets integrated into some of the major releases, I think it'll be quite improved. And by the time 4.1 rolls around, I think it'll be shaping up nicely. Now, one of the big questions that Dan had was, is the big S analog clock on by default? And we also had a listener email criticizing us for getting on Vista's case about having a big-ass analog clock. And I could say that KDE 4.0 does not come with the big-ass analog clock on by default. You have to go in and turn that on.
And that's good because I am not a fan of the big-ass analog clock. I am actually quite opposed to that. And I don't understand why they people persist on slapping an analog clock on a desktop. The GPC GOS has a big ass analog clock on the left hand side or right hand side of the screen. Now it's about the size of a quarter, so it's not as big as the Vista one that I was complaining about last week. But it does have it there, and I for the life of me, I don't understand the compelling reason to display an analog clock when a digital clock would be more in line with a desktop, more accessible and easier to read. You know, I do think everybody should know how to tell time on an analog clock. I think that's important, but I don't want to sit there and try and figure out what time it is on a faceless analog clock because I'm lazy. And I'm an United Statesian. I'm from the United States, man.
I want my
time spoken to me in American. If it can't do that, then I want it displayed to me in plain old American numbers. Damn it.
None of that communist analog big-ass clock thing.
That's right. I don't want this old world analog clock. I want American numbers on there. American numbers.
How do you feel about big-ass analog clocks on your desktop?
Waste of space. You know.
Link says, if I want to know what time it is, I'll look at the big-ass analog clock on my wall.
Right.
Although the big-ass analog clock attached to your wrist.
Do you guys wear watches?
No,
I do, yeah.
I can't wear one and type. It drives me crazy.
See, go ahead, Pat.
I'm not one for these big, clunky, big-ass wristwatches because I don't have, like, humongous wrists. I like nice, you know, sleek, decent-looking watches. I have a Swatch, don't you? No, I don't have a Swatch. I have the watch that I wear every day is a Skagen, which is, I think, from Denmark. Trolls can confirm that.
I remember when Swatches were big and you had the Swatch Guard, and a Swatch was essentially a small-ass analog clock without a face on it, but just a decoration.
True. And they had these, like, these little rubber band things that you would put on them.
Yes, that's a Swatch Guard. God, Pat, where were you, man? Rubber band things. It's called the Swatch Guard. Jeez. It's the same kind of material that you made jelly rings and jelly bracelets out of. And jelly shoes.
Right. They used to wear to the Madonna concerts.
Yes. Yes. I don't wear a watch. I've never had a successful run at wearing a watch. They always ended up the band breaking and going through the washing machine and breaking. So now I just use my cell phone. If I need to check the time. You guys should see my cell phone, man. This thing is on its last leg. The hinge is broke, so it's actually two separate parts connected together with the wire that goes in between them, and the antenna keeps falling off. So every time I want to make a call, I got to, like, reassemble the antenna in it and then hold it together so that I can dial the number and then listen to it. And it's like someone had punched somebody in the face and their tooth's hanging out by just a little piece of skin. That's my cell phone. That's what I use every day now. It's a mess. It is a mess. But that does not have anything to do with a big-ass analog clock. Big-ass analog clock. So, yes. And if you're interested in weighing in on your opinion as to whether we should call it a big-ass analog clock or a big-effing analog clock, you can cast your vote at the poll over on our forums. We are starting a crusade against the big-ass analog clocks, and hopefully they will be dissolved from all Linux desktop operating systems in the near future. Right, Pat? Link?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It needs to be removed from every desktop.
Is it? So what have you been up to, Link, aside from working?
Working. Working, working, and more working. I will be up to... I just got another really cool book from Pearson Education from Prentice Hall. It's a Sobel's Practical Guide to Ubuntu Linux. And looks like a really kicking book that I will be going through in the next few days, I hope. Big book. It's got all kinds of crap in it. Pretty interesting stuff. And that's about, you know, the best review that I could give it right at the moment, because I've only been able to crack the cover and kind of, you know, finger browse through it a little bit. But other than that, I'm working, really that's it. I mean, the I've been doing some interesting stuff at work, like, you know, playing with VMware under Linux and, you know, making some different VMs and things like that and having a little fun with that. And I highly suggest that, by the way, people. If you, you know, if you have a machine that has a little horsepower to it and some memory, by all means, grab the free VMware server and go to town. Knock yourself out. Play with stuff. It's an awful lot of fun.
That's cool. You get all the fun stuff to work with the virtual machines and everything. You haven't done anything with VirtualBox, have you?
No. No, I'm a VMware guy only at this point in time, so...
Ay, ay, ay. But that sounds really, really fun stuff. VMware guy only. When are you going to expand to VirtualBox?
Well, I don't know. I haven't had a chance to play with it. And VMware, you know, VMware keeps changing their stuff and getting new things going on. And since I run VMware at work, I'm pretty much primarily, I guess, a VMware guy. Don't see a lot of need to check out other stuff because, you know, really, if you stop and think about it, other than maybe Parallels, which runs really, really well, right? Other than that, there really is no contender for what VMware is doing. And I know that a lot of people say, well, you know, VirtualBox is really cool and QEMU is really cool and KVM, which, by the way, is a retarded name, is really cool. And I absolutely agree with it, you know, and Zen and all that other stuff. I think it's fantastic that they're working all this stuff into the kernel and, you know, they're working on it and stuff, but it just does not have, right now, any of this stuff, the same level of polish and finesse and, of course, support as VMware does. And, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at with that. And by the time it catches up to where VMware is now, VMware will be somewhere way out there in the distance. The only thing that has the potential to change my mind about that is the fact that the new VMware stuff that they're doing now with vMotion and things like that relies heavily upon a Windows base for the controller software, which sort of pisses me off. The new VI3 stuff that, you know, that actually runs the VMs, that's the standard VI3 that is, you know, like a Unix-based, a Linux-based kind of thing for the operating system, but the actual controller software runs on a, you know, a Windows box, which is stupid.
What is vMotion?
That's just me. Okay, vMotion is this. VMware has this new product out called VI3, and VI3 is an ESX sort of VMware product, which means it's Unix-based for the operating system. So you put your VMs on there, and you can say you have, you know, 10 or 100 or 1,000 of these VI3 servers, okay? What vMotion does is turn all of those servers into a cluster. So when you have this vMotion installed, this cluster, all the VMs become, or all the base VM hosts become transparent, and you only have one VM host that you have to worry about. And the software manages all the VMs on all the hosts. So if you have, say, a host go down, it simply takes a memory snapshot of all the VMs that were on that host and migrates them off to an available host and turns them back on again where they left off. And supposedly, it's supposed to be able to do this without dropping a TCP/IP connection. You know, so it's supposed to be really, really fast and efficient. And this also will monitor, like, you know, the load and things like that and qualify it with some other things and, you know, just to keep the VMs running as best it can. you know, in the best possible manner. It's really some slick stuff.
But you're saying the management for this is going Windows-based?
The management console for it sits on a Windows, you know, a Windows platform, which, you know, like I said, I really think that that's a dumb thing to do. Everything else runs under, you know, a Unix-y, Linux-y kind of back end, except for this management console. And, you know, which I'm sure is great for all the Windows people out there, but for, you know, for the Linux people out there, sort of a letdown.
That is a bummer. I mean, VMware's been pretty OS agnostic for a long time, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And to come out with a...
Yeah, pretty much. It's been web-based, right, ever since they, you know... Well, ever since, really. Their web-based stuff has just run the way it does. And it still does on the new ESX portion of the VI3. Like, you can go to an actual base host and use the standard old, you know, VMware server web page kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And manage things around, but it's just this whole clustered vMotion thing. The software sits on a Windows base, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why they would want to do that, because, you know, I mean, we all know that Windows is not anywhere near as stable as Linux, and if you're looking for rock solid stability and you're going to VMware for that sort of thing, because that's, you know, that's where you get that kind of support, why would they be pushing, you know, having their controller software on a Windows base? It just doesn't make sense to me.
So
hopefully they'll get the hint and, you know, and fix that and offer a Unix-based solution. That would be nice.
It's kind of a shame.
It is. It almost seemed to me like maybe that was a cheap way out for development for them to get the product out early and running or something like that, you know?
Either that or they just wanted to piss you off.
Must be.
See, that's what they said. They said, we're going to piss Link off.
Mm-hmm.
Man, so what do you think of the... Now, I know Pat's really interested in this, too. The MacBook Air. Have you seen any of that?
I only had it just a second to look at that, the specs for it and stuff online, and it seems like it's going to be an awful expensive thing to break, you know.
Because
you know it can't be that sturdy, being that thin. You know, no way.
So you think if I drop kicked it, it would shatter into a million pieces?
I think I don't think you have to drop kick it. I think you probably would just have to lean on it hard, and it would bust pretty good. I can't imagine anything that thin, you know, having any substance to it. It's supposed to be really thin and really light, and you know, I think it's going to be a good candidate to, you know, for a lot of people to be breaking their new toy. I may be wrong, you know. But either way, you know, when you stop and think about it, and I don't even know what the price is, right? I didn't even look to see what the prices are on it. But
$1,800.
Is it really? There's another thing. You know, you got these people spending $400 for an EPC, and then you get Apple's version of the EPC comes out. It's $1,800. And, you know, it's $1,800 worth of something that you're going to break the first time you stick it in your, you know, book bag, because it doesn't have enough substance to protect it from getting folded in half or whatever, you know. It seems a little crazy for me. I may be wrong, though, you know. One of these days I might saunter into an Apple store just to look and see.
Actually, I was over by an Apple store the other day. I mean, I took my wife out for dinner over by the Lehigh Valley Mall, and there's an Italian restaurant like two doors down, and we went there. So afterwards, you know, for shits and giggles, you know, we wanted to go for a walk before we went to the mall. We went into the Apple store for like 2 seconds, and the place was just like packed full of Kool-Aid drinkers, man. I couldn't believe it. It reinforces the whole notion that, you know, Vista is an unmitigated disaster, and it really has opened up an opportunity for other operating systems to freaking come in. And, you know, I criticize Apple for what they are. I'll give them this much. They know how to advertise to people, especially to the yuppie crowd, and they're buying it hook, line, and sinker. So kudos to Apple for their, you know, marketing campaign.
You know what? More power to them. I figured out long ago that I want to pick my battles. You know what I mean? And my major battle is I absolutely detest Microsoft. So, you know, that's the one that I'm focusing on. I love Linux. I would love to see everybody using Linux. Linux makes a lot more sense to me than anything else. However, for some, you know, some completely non-technical people
with a lot of money,
a better solution if they have the money, and that's a big if, you know, if they have the, I'm not going to say, you know, like everybody says, oh, you tell your grandmother to go out and buy an OS X box, because they're really expensive, right? And my grandmother doesn't have, you know, wads and wads of cash to throw away. But, you know, for people who do have enough money that they could throw at something like that, and if they're completely non-technical, hey, I would much rather see them using OS X than using Windows. At least if you're using OS X, you're sort of getting indoctrinated to the Unix way of doing things, or more Unix-y definitely than Windows. And you're also learning that you can use a different sort of operating system platform and enjoy it, because it doesn't, you know, enjoy the fact that it does not work like Windows, like it doesn't crash all the time and things like that. So there are some definite pluses. I mean,
so
I don't like the
so
way
like
that
if
sort
money
of
wasn't an object, if money wasn't an object, would you go all Apple?
No. Because I like Linux. You know, there are some definite advantages for me using Linux. I like having the freedom to, you know, choose the different things that I want to choose and configure it the way that I want to have it configured. And a lot of that, you know, a lot of that is not available under Apple.
Wait, you just confused me. The man who hates freedom likes the freedom to choose.
Yeah, right.
My world's going to explode.
Yeah, but see, the hating freedom part is that it's me really loving freedom enough
to hate it.
You know, to be able to make the choice that maybe I want to buy something and pay for it other than getting it for free. And that's, you know, maybe I think that it's possible that you could buy a proprietary driver for something and have it actually be worth the money. That's where I and RMS disagree. He thinks everything should be free and piss on everybody, and I think, you know, software developers ought to be able to make some money too, you know, somehow. But
you're telling me, like, it's not practical for everybody to go live on a commune, not get married and have children and own a house?
No,
a
I don't think so, man, because I've done a whole lot of software development, and I like to get paid for my work too, you know.
That's sacrilege.
Like you and I and Dan that do software coding and get paid for it. You know, the thing with that is we don't have anybody who's paying us thousands and thousands of dollars to go on, you know, speaking gigs at different colleges and universities. If I could get away with that, hey, maybe I could, you know, maybe my aspirations would be a little bit loftier in that area, but as it sits, man, I hack code for money just like a lot of other people do. So,
man. So you don't think we should voluntarily sterilize ourselves, you know, not have any children?
No.
It's a little late for that, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little late for that, yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever upload a song, Pat?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Fantastic. Speaking of cool and wonderful things, my first two parts of my review for the GPC and the GOS operating system are up on my blog, in addition to Logger has part one of the review, including my daughter's impressions of Well, actually, her putting it together and then giving me her impressions of the GOS and how well it runs WoW. And for those who have questioned whether this thing can run WoW, yeah, it does. Actually, read my blog, and it runs it, I thought, pretty well. Now, C4 is going to bitch and moan that I'm wrong because he's been saying that on the chat, but I disagree. I think it runs perfectly fine for me. Although I don't know what I'm missing.
And I listened to that today, and you did a very good job, and your daughter did a very nice job, too.
But we have, I think, at least one more logger on the GPC, and we're also going to get the rest of the guys, those guys back in and continue on with a whole new year of logger. Back Ooh. From the dead. Oh, yeah, Pat... You almost made me forget one of the things I wanted to remind people of today, particularly the wonderful world of podcasters out there. Two little pieces of advice. One.
Uh-oh, here we go.
One. A couple pieces of advice. One, when you name your the file of your show, it would be really helpful if you put the title of your show in there and the number, instead of just calling it show or some other arbitrary name, because I download your show, I have no idea what it's called, because it's like episode one, episode two, episode... I don't know what that show is. You're not the only show that I listen to. So that would be very, very, very helpful. Two, it would be nice to have a feed that's easy to find on the website, and if you have AUG files and MP3 files, to have two separate feeds. So, you know, I can subscribe either to the AUG or the MP3. Not a feed with both of them in there, not just an MP3 feed. It would be nice to have the AUG feed. If you're taking the time to do the AUG file, doing an extra feed for it is not hard at all.
And just a word of advice, if you have a lot of episodes, don't include all of them in your feed.
Yeah, that's kind of helpful, too. Maybe the last 10 episodes is a really good round number.
Even 20 is a little more reasonable, you know? You know, right. The worst thing you could do is, like, if somebody subscribes to your feed, and you got to pull down, like, 100 episodes.
Yeah, especially what can get annoying is if I subscribe to your feed and I pull down, I've been subscribed to your feed for a while, then you change the location of your files and I have to re-download all of them again. It's helpful if you don't have your entire Bulldog feed in there. Even, you know, because it's just helpful that way, I think. That's my opinion. What do you think, Link?
I think you're right, and I think I have one little announcement, too, before I forget. Bert Van Ketch sent me an email asking me to remind everybody to join the Tech Show Folding at Home team.
Which is going gangbusters, by the way.
Folding at Home team. Yes, which is, and in fact, I just looked at the stats, a few minutes ago, and it looks phenomenal. I mean, I can't remember the last time seeing that many people on the team. There's hordes and hordes of people on there now. But, definitely, you know, check that stuff out. And, we have links on the website for that. So if you have some spare cycles, please jump right in and join in the fun. What Bert says is that he installed Folding at Home on his MythBox and let it run. He says that as he's only watching TV for a few hours each day, there's heaps of processing power to spare on his 2.7 gigahertz P4. And he said other people might be interested in doing the same thing. So jump right on, and, you know, that's a good place to use up some spare cycles. If you have a MythBox that's not doing anything, have it do some folding, and you know, not only will you be really cool because you're joining the TLLTS Folding at Home team, but, you know, good grief, maybe we could all do something great together for the global community and find some kind of, you know, cure for cancer or even the common cold. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Hear, hear.
Yep, yep, yep.
You guys have any shout-outs? I got a shout-out.
I got a question for you, Link. Did you ever check out my the Bash Powder script I sent you yet?
Yeah, I have it running. Didn't I email you back about that?
I don't think you did.
I have it running.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it going to go up on your Bash Powder site?
Yeah, as soon as I, you know,
make a
have enough time
with
to
my
do
name.
Anything. I also have, you know, I have to apologize to Ilan about the scale promo and stuff like that. I want to put the web banner up on, you know, the tech show site, too. I just have not had, you know, 20 seconds to myself in like a month now. This is insane. And it's even hard on tech show. And it just seems like every Wednesday there's some kind of freaking catastrophe. And, you know, it's just a horrible day for me. From start to finish, and then Thursday I'm burnt out because I'm up all night doing the tech show stuff. It's tough. I will get to it, though, I promise. I have all of these emails that I still have, you know, stuff I have to take care of. It's just sitting in my email box looking at me every time I open my email. So if there's something that you've asked me to do, it's in my inbox, and I will do it. It just might take me a little while.
Pat, is that song the Mandrake Root song?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Seeing Dan's ignoring me now because his email's been sitting in my inbox for like a month now. You know?
Ignoring you what way? No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. You're a busy guy. Too busy for my needs.
Sure seems that way, man. I've got more computers running in the house now that just, it's just insane, you know. I'm sitting here with three laptops. I got a laptop running in the bedroom next to my, you know, dual head Linux box and my Mac Mini. And
so you're warming your place with computer
heat. It's insane, man. It's insane. There's always something else going on. You know what it is? And I hate to suck up time about this, but I'm sure everybody will agree with me. What it is I run out of screen real estate. You ever do that? Like you're coding or something like that, and you got a lot of work going on, and you want to be able to see what's going on, you just run out of screens. And
you need more virtual desktops.
No, I can't stand virtual desktops because you can't see what's going on. You know, I like to be able to see what's going on when I'm doing all this stuff, and sometimes.
So you need a bank of monitors, like at Best Buy, where they have like, you know, 30 TVs, you know, high definition TVs, taking up a whole wall.
What I need is like three or four, you know, 30-inch widescreen monitors that I can just stack up all over the place. Not only would that be wicked cool, but that might actually give me enough screen real estate to do some work on, you know. I get going to work, you know, I have two screens when I'm working, and you know, because I admin between 60 and 70 Linux servers, I might have, you know, 10 or 15 different, you know, just 10 or 15 terminals open just to do some routine mundane thing, and that doesn't count, you know, if I'm doing any coding at the same time and how many web pages I might have open doing this or that, or, you know, an email and documents and all kinds of other crap. So that's what I really need. Yeah, and somebody's mentioning, who is it? Bugs? Bugs is mentioning the new Alienware Curve double 24-inch monitor. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I could use one of them. Have you guys seen those?
Yeah, that looks freaking cool, man.
They are sweet. I would love to do some beta testing on Linux with a couple of them. That would be banging.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for Dan to send that off to me, right?
Wait, what am I sending?
You're
off
piping
to?
Away over there.
What am I sending?
You're sending
off
me
to?
One of those Alienware Curve 24-inch monitors, weren't you?
Didn't you get both of them I sent you?
Not yet.
Well, yeah, I'll look into that. I've got to find out where UPS sent them to. Yeah. All right, gentlemen. Next,
I got a couple shout-outs.
Oh, here we go.
I got a shout-out to Dan and Fab from Linux Outlaws. I was over at their forum, man. They got a nice forum going on there. You guys can go over there and check it out. They're very cool guys. Next week, we've got Clem from Linux Mint Project coming on, which should be a good interview.
You know what? I got to say something about Linux Outlaws. I was listening to them the other day. And
they're pretty funny, aren't they?
The distro roundup that they were doing. And when he was talking about Dynabolic, and he said, oh, I thought it was Dialabolic. I just started laughing.
Who's that, Fab?
He's the British guy.
Oh, Dan.
Yeah, he said Dialabolic, like a Bollocks. Anyway, if you don't know what bollock is, look it up on Urban Dictionary or somebody. It was funny. Go ahead, continue your shout outs, Pat.
I think that's all I got for this week.
Okay.
We also got a request to do another listener call in show, so maybe we could do that sooner than later. And then in 2 weeks, we got Ilan and Orv from Scale. They're going to give us a preview of the Scale show conference in Los Angeles. That should be a good one. On February 6th, we have open. Maybe we could do a call-in episode then.
Okay.
And that's about it. Our music that we're playing out is from the band Mandrake Group. You can go listen to them on magnitude.com. The name of the song is called The Seventh Mirror. And that's about it.
All right.
You ready to play us out there?
Yeah, I'm just setting up the I want to play the Scale promo again.
Okay. Everybody, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Taking the time to come listen to our show. Everybody on the IRC, shout out to you guys. And we'll talk to you next week. Link, it was nice having you on, man.
Yeah. Maybe that'll make a happen out of it.
Special guest episode, Link's resident.
Yeah.
I'll put that on there. Matthew Craig and Link resident special guest. You know, that's not true, because Link was here last week.
Yes, he was.
Hey, Link, you don't have to leave, and we're gonna close the show down, but you're more than willing to stay on and continue talking.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
All right, everybody, thank you very much. I'll talk to you guys this week. Have a great time. Safe trip to work, Link and Pat, tomorrow. You know what? Wow, it's amazing that we all have, like, these incredible commutes to work.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be just Pat and Alan, and now it's like, wow.
Yeah, your commute is, what, 45 minutes, right, Dan?
Well, that's when there's no traffic, and there's a lot of traffic. 45 through minutes through at least one tunnel. So.
Yeah.
Under,
I do an hour. Pat does you do an hour, don't you, Pat?
Underneath bodies of water.
Yeah, about an hour.
But I know Alan does an hour. That's some serious stuff right there. I mean, we got half a work. Yeah, we got an entire work day between all of us just in commute time, right?
Yeah, that's... It's too bad we can't do the show like Dave Yates does on the way home.
Yeah. Well, if I could just get better Wi-Fi reception on the train, you know?
All right, everybody. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you guys soon.
See you, everybody. Have a good night.
Dad.
You too. Yeah.
By now, you've probably heard about Linux, but whether you're a pro or have barely heard the word, Scale. The Southern California Linux Expo has something for you. Scale 6X will have over 50 speakers covering the hottest topics in open source software and more than 75 booths this year representing a wide range of commercial products and nonprofit organizations. Don't forget Friday's special sessions with Docs, open source software in the healthcare industry, the Women in Open Source Conference, and new this year is the Open Source Software in Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2008 at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles, California. For more information and to register for the expo, visit SoCalLinuxExpo.org. Use promo code CAST, that's C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration. We'll see you at Scale.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
Woo! It's over.
You're over, pal. Dun, dun, dun. I was on your site today.
Okay.
Oh, I was just saying, I was on your site.
Oh, all right.
I like your site.
No, good stuff. You know, I just, well, I should say this for the show, but I just put together that you run the Logger podcast, which I am a big fan of.
Well, thank you very much. Did you listen to the latest episode?
No, I downloaded it. I've got it on my computer. I haven't listened to it yet, but now I've been... real happy with your kids' reviews there of games, and got Troy over from my game company to listen to the shows, and he's tickled with the reviews they do because he's writing games just for kids and just so he can make kids happy and just like that. So
I got a bad confession. I have not bought Fashion Sense yet. And my kids are angry because my daughter said to me, "Why won't you buy the game?" I'm like, "Well, we'll buy it this weekend when I get paid." And she's like, "You said that before." And I'm like, "I promise you, we'll buy it this weekend." I don't believe you. Pat?
Nope. Link.
Link. I'm sorry.
See, you're wishful thinking, Ian. You were telling me today, we got to have more Link on the show. And I come on and he's like, "No, is it Pat?" Oh, dang.
I'm sorry, you must be in the wrong conference.
I'm in the wrong conference.
You're in the wrong conference, sir. You want the Apple conference show. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, that must be it. Sorry about that.
Link, this is Matthew. Matthew, this is Link.
Hi, Matthew.
You know, Link, that Alan's not going to be on tonight.
Yep.
And I don't know what the deal is with Pat. He's usually on by now, but we could just start the show now. We got everybody we need, right?
Yeah. You had everybody you needed before I got on.
That's not true. You are an integral part of the show. Without you, there really isn't a show. What did I say to Pat today that pissed him off of the IRC? I don't remember now. Damn it. I have to go back and look at my logs. Oh, there he is.
Greg says I was too busy pre-ordering the MacBook Air. Yeah. I wish I had money like that, dude.
The MacBook fart.
No, I bet that's Pat.
Did you want some? I'm sorry, there was only like a little bit left by the time I got to it. Do you want me to make you something? Yeah.
Hello?
Hey, Pat.
Oh, you should have just kept quiet.
How's it going?
Great. Matthew is already on. Matthew, Pat, Matthew.
Hey, man, how are you?
Hey, good talk again.
He's like, he was like right in there, perfect sounding audio. He's good to go. Who are you whispering to?
My son, he's sitting here, my little one. Say hi, little guy.
He's just looking at the mic. It's my youngest son. He's 8 months old.
Dun, dun. Oh, you know what? I got... I'll wait till we start the show. This is a good one. How's the little guy doing tonight?
He's good. My wife was just putting my older boy to sleep, so he's sitting here on my lap for a couple minutes.
Your oldest son is what? Two?
Four.
Does he realize that he's ending up going to bed before the younger one yet?
I don't think it makes a difference to him, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Because the little one's taking naps during the day and stuff.
Oh, you just wait. In a couple more years, it's going to be fighting and fussing and bitter rivalry between the two.
Dun, dun. And in this corner. Right, Dan?
That's right.
You have plenty of that.
Does your daughter complain when you send her to bed before you guys? Does she like, well, you guys get to stay up?
Oh, yeah. My daughter complains about everything. The interesting part about that whole thing is, like, you have two little girls, so they fight each other, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, I have a little girl and a big girl, and they fight each other. I only have one daughter, so, you know, instead of fighting a sibling, she has, you know, knockdown, drag-out fights with my wife.
At least she's not fighting with you, huh?
No, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. She learned a long time ago that I was not going to be a participant in that sort of thing.
Hey, Dan, you got music for the end of the show?
No, I don't. I'm not that prepared. I usually don't get music till halfway through the show, if that.
You just put whatever you see the first thing, right?
Yeah. That's why, like, about halfway or three quarters through the show, when you hear people start cutting out, that's because of downloading the music.
I get it now.
See? That's the plan. Why, do you have a song?
Not really. I could put something up if you'd like.
That's fine.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, if you notice that I all of a sudden cut out for a few minutes, I'm helping a friend out at work with a scheduled server reboot. So hopefully sometime in the near future, the server will actually get done backing up and I can reboot this stupid thing.
Ooh, you're going to reboot it remotely. It must be a Linux box.
Actually, it's a VMware host. So it's not just the one server. It's, you know, a whole pile of them.
And what are they? Is it a whole pile of Nix operating systems, or is there Windows involved there?
Both.
Isn't that risky to get the Windows to come back up, or does it actually work properly?
You know what? And I really hadn't given it much thought one way or the other because I'm the Linux guy, so... I'm working with the Windows guy, and he's taking care of the Windows stuff, and I'm taking care of the Linux stuff. But no, really, VMware works really, really well anyway. So,
well, I don't doubt VMware works really well. I'm just curious because I know, like,
they come back up.
When I used to have to reboot servers remotely, it was always, you know, hold your breath and cross your fingers and get ready to drive back into work.
Well, it's a lot easier if you're rebooting a VMware host, because as long as the host machine comes up, you can, you know, twiddle the other things remotely really easily. But in this case, the host machine happens to be a Windows VMware server, so. Which is,
taking a look at that, ESX, you
know, why we're rebooting
VMware server.
I work for a big university over here, and our university is one of the largest VMware installations on the East Coast. And we are currently using the new VI3 VMware stuff.
Right.
Which is really, really fantastically nice.
With the control center and all that?
Yes. The new virtual center stuff is awesome. It migrates between, to migrate your VMs between servers automatically, and it's really cool.
You're going to get some open source stuff like that now.
So they say.
All right, you know what? Hold on. Ha-ha! You know what? Two things. I've finally realized that, one, all this time that I've not been doing the backup recording, I could have been doing the backup recordings on the Dynabolic machine, which there should be no reason to lose lose any recordings now. So I have a separate recording going on, but if somebody else wants to make a third recording, that's always, wonderful.
I could fire mine up on this one.
If you want to. Secondly, I've been neglectful in playing the Scale promo these past couple of weeks. So
yes, you have, Dan.
Of course, because of that, we are under the watchful eye of Elon in the IRC. Chat room, and I'd like to just make a note that the promo that was sent to us this year was an MP3 format, not an AUG. And I might have to make a phone call to the Free Software Foundation and Richard Stallman, and maybe he could speak to Elon nicely and educate him in the finer ways of free software and free format.
See? You're going to stick the software police on them.
I think so. You know, I might have been neglectful these past couple of days, but imagine my horror and shock when I actually went to queue up the audio and it's an MP3 format. I don't know if I can continue on with the rest of the night. And now that I finally got ops in the IRC server, I might just have to kick him.
How long did that did it take you to figure that out, Dan?
What?
How to change the... to change the title.
It took way too long. It took way too long to figure it out. And when I finally dug down deep into it and looked through a bunch of stuff and figured out, wow, this is the way you actually have to do it, because there's only one way you can actually do it, and it's not, and it's like, oh, slap in the forehead, but at the same time, it's like, I wish it was a little more evident. And now we're golden.
Hey, speaking of Oz Vorbis, now, what would you say your percentages are for downloads of your show, MP3 to OGG format?
Link, do you have a response to that? Because I don't really know.
I have only an educated guesstimate based on, some past queries on it, and it's almost a third.
A third is OGG format.
Right. Yeah. A third of it is OGG. Almost.
Well, there's so many tools out there.
It's somewhere between a quarter and a third. It depends on, it depends on the show and how hard it's hit and what kind of thing is going on.
There's so many tools like that. Apple, iTunes.
That's my boss calling now. Catch up with you guys in a couple minutes.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I can get...
Yeah, just give me a second. I can fire up the recording.
Yeah, go ahead. According to, wait, let me see here. Well, according to FeedBurner statistics, if I look at who subscribed to the feeds, it's about a quarter of the subscribers are OGG subscribers. So, which means that apparently a little more people are downloading the OGG manually without subscribing to one of the feeds. Bam, bam, bam.
Now hopefully, eventually we'll get better open format tools out there. Right now, so many people use iTunes or their iPod or MP3 player that doesn't support it. So it's understandable that even Linux people would listen to MP3 format. But just curious.
It's understandable, but not acceptable.
Not acceptable. We need to work for better. Yes.
No. You need to work a little better there, Matthew, not us. We work hard enough as it is.
Okay, I got the recording going, Dan, so you can start the show anytime you'd like.
All right. Okay. Since you're familiar with the show, Matthew, you obviously know we're going to play the intro stuff, and then we're going to say hi and introduce you, okay?
Yes, sir. Sounds good.
All right, so here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, wait, it would help if I plug in the audio. Okay, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.